Now is the time. What's going on? Welcome to the program. My name is Jim Rome. Now is the time because you are running out of time. It is a short week. We are wrapping 2020. Come on in. Get up in here. Let's get some. Welcome to the program. It's brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Welcome to the show. Got a very good one for you. I am Jim Rome. I am live. We are in Southern California. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter, please, at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. All right, so we've got today, we've got tomorrow. Thursday is our year in review. So you really, literally have two final days to get through. If there's anything you want to say to wrap up the year, you want to share any thoughts with us, you want to do it today and you want to do it tomorrow, because the year in review is a full show. Every single year, we barely make it to the end of the program and cover everything we've got to get done. So have I made myself clear? Am I emphatic enough? You want to get through today or you want to get through tomorrow because Thursday is locked up, and then see you next year. Show sets up like this. Coming up next segment, CeCe Sabathia, retired MLB ace, World Series champ, Cy Young Award winner. There is a documentary out about his life, and it's really interesting. CeCe Sabathia coming up next segment. I haven't had him on the program in quite some time. The second hour right now is wide open. Speaking of somebody who has not been on the program for a while, Brett Bielema, the new head coach at Illinois, will be joining us. That's at the top of hour number three. And we are efforting a third guest, which may or may not happen. So that's a good opportunity for you. Had a little fun yesterday, didn't we? We're going to have a little more fun today. Today's interesting. I want to have fun, and there's something very sad that happened yesterday that I want to get into, but we'll still have some fun. You have your telephone number. Also, Alvin is giving the Christmas music treatment to another clone. We did that a couple of times yesterday and went really, really well. Ask yourself, what clone do you think is deserving of the Alvin Claus treatment? Somebody's getting it today. All right, let me start with what I saw last night. After the Steelers beat the Baltimore Ravens to go to 11-0, Mike Tomlin was not impressed. Tomlin was saying things like the team's performance was, quote, really JV. He repeatedly used the word, quote, unacceptable. And then he added this as well.
It was just bad by all parties involved, man. Coaches first, players second. We make no excuses. We seek no comfort. We didn't play well or coach well tonight.
All right, so this guy's coming with a straight fire. And then it only got better when somebody asked him, why did the team have so much trouble in the red zone? He said simply,
us sucking.
Again.
Us sucking.
I mean again. He said all these things after a win. But Tomlin, let me tell you about Tomlin. Tomlin knew that thinking you are what your record says you are is bullcrap. He knew better. That's why he lit into his team after a win. That's why he lit into his team after it went to 11-0, because he knew that kind of play was going to catch up to them. He knew that kind of play was going to bite them in the ass. And he was right, because then they went out and they promptly lost to Washington. Then they lost to Buffalo. Now, instead of asking the question of, are they good enough to win at all, we're asking ourselves the question, are they good enough to even win a playoff game? Or are they one and done? Because suddenly they looked all wrong. And what started out as just a few guys dropping a few passes became this slow-moving avalanche that has consumed the entire team. Like those drops infected everybody on both sides of the ball. Now, the good news is, last night, they were facing a two-win Cincinnati Bengal team. If ever there was a get-right game, it was that. You pound the Bengals, you get your mojo back, and you get ready for the postseason. You get back on track. You get back on the path. After all, they had beaten the Natty 11 straight times. 12 would be no problem. An 11-win team was about to punch a two-win team with a backup quarterback in the face. Bully the Bengals, get right. Except one problem. None of that happened. Last night was a complete and unadulterated disaster for the Steelers. And it all started before the game when Juju Smith-Schuster danced on the Bengals logo. Now, let me be very clear about Juju. This is a Juju Smith-Schuster house. I love the kid. I love the guy. Great game, great attitude, great ability. Believe me, the game needs more Juju. It does. I love the fact that this guy comes out and he dances on the opposing team's logo. I actually think it's great. I love it. He knows it's going to piss him off. He knows they're going to come looking for him. In other words, he is aware. He knows exactly what he's doing. He just doesn't give a bleep, which I love. The opposition, yeah, well, that's a different story. Not so much. Extremely motivated and proud world-class athletes do not like being disrespected. They're funny like that. And the Bengals did not like that at all. Bengals safety Von Bell said during the week, quote, "We got to go out there between the lines and hit him and let him know where he stands," end quote. So, when Juju danced on the Bengals logo and posted it on social media, it was on. And sure enough, who was the first guy to find Juju on the field? None other than Von Bell, and he let Juju know exactly where he stands.
Here's some pressure from the Bengals. Roethlisberger, Juju Smith-Schuster is blown up, and the whistles blow.
Ben's not seeing it real well right now. I think they're going to challenge that ruling on the field of whether that was a catch or not.
And a clear recovery,
Cincinnati
John Perry, there is.
The ruling on the field.
There is a clear recovery.
And Von Bell there is saying, "Hey, you want to dance on our logo pregame? Really?"
Reviewing the play, the receiver completed the process of a catch. As a result, it is a catch and a fumble.
And then Von Bell completed the process of hitting Juju with a 2x4. Like, if you want to sum up last night in a single play, it was right there. Juju getting wrecked and fumbling after dancing on the team logo, and it led directly to points for the Bengals. Pretty incredible. Almost as incredible as Bell being asked after the game what he saw in that play, and him saying, quote, "I seen 19.
I seen 19. That's
strong.
I'm not a boastful guy, man. I just go out there and let my play do the talking, man, you know. It just happened that they come today. I just play football, man. Just going out to the show and play.
What did you see on that play? Quote, "I seen 19.
I seen 19.
Hey, let me be clear, too. I'm not going to tell Juju to stop dancing. Honestly, I love it. Keep it up. Nor am I going to tell opposing players to stop hitting him legally. Keep that up, too. I love it all. It's great. Clearly, though, while posting that may have pumped Juju and his followers up, it got the Bengals way more hyped. And that post last night, that particular post, did more damage than good for Juju and the Steelers. But as bad as that was, that's not the reason they lost. Let's also be clear about that. That's not the reason they lost that game. It was just another subplot in a horrible night for the Steelers. Here's the worst part for Steeler fans. Juju's dancing is the least of your worries. That doesn't even crack the top 10, because there's a lot more to worry about when it comes to Big Ben. Juju's dancing and fumble weren't even the worst part of that play. The most bizarre part was Roethlisberger hitting Smith for a 2-yard gain on 3rd and 7. How often are we seeing that from Roethlisberger? Him just nickel-diming and dinking and diming his way down the field. Dunking, I should say. It's like some of the most monotonous, mind-numbing, unwatchable offensive football I've ever seen in my life, especially from that guy. Hell, he did hit the 60,000-yard passing mark last night, right? Imagine if he'd been doing this his entire career. The thing that he's been doing the last several weeks, it probably would have taken 60,000 years to get those 60,000 yards. I mean, again, it's like unwatchable. Look, Benjamin just isn't right. In fact, he's all wrong. He's not consistent. He's not making the right reads. He's not getting time to go deep because he's constantly under pressure. And when he does have time to take shots down the field, he's inaccurate. I mean, dude looks like he is what he is. 38 years old with serious mileage on him. You want ugly. How about these numbers? These numbers in the first half. 7 of 16 for 19 yards. 1 INT. 1 fumble lost. 0 TDs. Those are not Ben Roethlisberger numbers. That's some Duck Hodges bleep right there. And that pick. Man, that pick wasn't just bad. That pick was awful.
Cincinnati rushing just three. Ben is intercepted. Picked off and high-stepping. It's Mackenzie Alexander for Cincinnati. And flags fly.
People will be enforced from the end of the run. Automatic. First down.
I mean, like, I know as you get older, you lose the ability to do certain things. Is this guy blind? Like, what was he looking at? What did he see on that play? I'm not sure what was worse for Steeler fans. The fact that Mackenzie Alexander barely moved for that pick, or that he high-stepped on the way out of bounds. But first of all, or worst of all, it's just defenses do not fear Ben anymore. They're not afraid of him. You cannot consistently win in the NFL if your quarterback does not scare an opposing defense. And right now, the only people that Ben is scaring are Steeler fans. It got so bad last night, there was Mason Rudolph discussion on the timeline. That's not good. And then this quote from Tomlin is not going to make Steeler fans feel any better about Ben's performance.
No, it's not injury related. It just wasn't good enough, like all of us, me included. You know, we got to be better.
No, it's not injury related. Is it age related? Like what is it? And by the way, it's not like that defense was awesome either. That crew had been terrifying earlier in the season. Now they're banged up and they're giving up points to the Bengals. And you figure, yeah, that'll happen. Like Joe Burrow? Joe Burrow is special. He's got a bright future. He's going to jump up. He's going to bite you now, even as a rookie. Except it wasn't Joe Burrow. He's been out for weeks. And his backup is out too. So we're talking about Ryan Finley. And it's not just that they were missing Burrow. They were also missing the top running back, receiver, and defensive player. And yet Ryan freaking Finley was carving them, making them look bad. Ryan Finley was out there looking like Michael Vick as he fooled the entire Steeler D on this play.
From the Pittsburgh 23, handoff out of the gun, fake, and it's taken by Finley, the 20, the 10, the block at the 5, running on the hash mark, into the end zone, touchdown Bengals! The Cincinnati quarterback with a 23-yard run with a fake handoff and over the left tackle.
Westwood won, and the Steelers are making Ryan Finley look like Lamar Jackson and Mike Vick rolled into one, untouched, against a team that used to have the best record in the league only a few minutes ago. Tomlin was asked if the team was confident.
Mike, what's your sense regarding your team's confidence level, and are you concerned it's getting a little fragile?
Should we better not be confident after a performance like that?
Straight fire. That's the truth. Not only did they not look like an 11-0 team last night, they didn't even look like an 11-3 team last night. They look more like a 3-11 team going up against a 2-win team and losing. In other words, they're playing their worst possible football at the worst possible time. They look like a lock to go 1-done in the playoffs. Like, if you can't beat a 2-win Bengals team with a backup quarterback in a must-win situation, how the hell are you going to beat anybody who matters in the postseason? Wait, I'll answer my own question. You can't. You won't. So never, ever, ever tell me again that you are what your record says you are, because the Steelers were 11-0 about 5 minutes ago. And if there's a bigger lie than that, then it's not coming to mind. Because on paper, at 11-0, they look like a bully that you want no part of. But right now, there is nobody in the AFC who doesn't want to run into these guys in the playoffs, because they're broken, they're running out of time, and there is no easy fix. Oh, and good for Roethlisberger saying that he wants to play next year. The question is there anybody in that facility that wants to take him up on that? What the hell happened to these guys? I mean, they may not have been as good as their record indicated, but what the hell happened to these guys? 1-800-636-8686.
I see 19.
What do you want to talk about? All right, so in addition to that, other things I want to talk about, and I mentioned a very sad day. Kevin Green passed away at the age of 58, and I will be really transparent in what I'm about to say. There aren't too many things that kind of choke me up. That chokes me up. Kevin Green And I don't play favorites because I've never been like that. I've always thought that they pay me to be objective. I never fanboyed anybody or anything. I try to keep a little bit of separation and distance between the people I talk to and I talk about, because inevitably, if they do something really stupid, I got to come in and go hard. I've always been really cognizant of that fact. So when I say to you, I don't have favorites, I mean that. And that's a conscious decision. Except Kevin Green was one of my favorites. That one hits home. So I want to talk about him. He was always an amazing guy to watch, an amazing guy to talk to. I love talking to him on this program, my TV shows. So that's a sad note that I want to hit on. On a happier note and a more positive note, Alvin Claus is going to get after somebody shortly. And we'll have that for you. And some more offbeat stuff. When we come back, though, CC Sabathia joins me. That's coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Phone lines open after that. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. And welcome to the show. In Southern California, I'm Jim Rome. If you're on hold, you want to stay there. Telephone call is coming up in a moment. But as promised, we are joined right now by a World Series champion. He is a Cy Young Award winner, six-time All-Star, more than 3,000 career strikeouts, all-time American League leader in strikeouts by a left-hander, 251 and 161 more wins than any other pitcher this century. And under the grapefruit tree, the CC Sabathia story debuts this evening, 9 p.m. Eastern on HBO. It's going to be available to stream on HBO Max. He joins us right now to talk about it. CC, it's been a minute or two. It's great to have you on the show. How are you doing, CC, and how is life for you after baseball?
It's been a minute, Jim. How you doing? I didn't know that American League stat, the lefty. That's crazy. It's been good. I mean, I keep telling people I should have retired 5 years ago. I'm really good at retirement. I've been enjoying, you know, being home with the family, kind of hanging out. Obviously, it's been a tough year this year, but, you know, being able to reintegrate into my family, had that time back that I missed, it's been a blessing. So I'm doing pretty good.
That's great. It's great to hear your voice. CC Sabathia joining us. You know, I want to get into the documentary, of course, in a moment, but the Sabathia family Christmas card is the stuff of legend. As an example, a few years back, there was a ViewMaster Christmas card. Am I correct in thinking that this year there is a Chia Pet theme card? And if so, how did that come to be?
Yeah, so this year was the Chia Pet. My wife comes up with these cards every year. I just kind of show up. I mean, we've done everything from Subway sandwiches to, we did Home Alone. We did, scenes out of Home Alone. So it's been all kind of stuff. And then this year, she thought it'd be cool to dress up as Chia Pets. And that was the Christmas card. So the Christmas card this year was a Chia Pet box with us on the cover. And the Chia Pet inside.
Yeah, we're showing it on CBS Sports Network right now. It looks awesome. So, CC, the documentary about your life comes and debuts this evening. How does it feel to be a few hours away from sharing this with the rest of the world?
No, it feels good. I'm excited. When we started filming last year, it wasn't in mind to have a documentary. It was just to film some cool moments, you know, coming up on my last year, 3,000 strikeouts, 250 wins. I thought it'd be cool to kind of have it like, you know, home movie stylish to have for the kids and my grandkids or whoever else. But, you know, got through the middle, halfway through the season, and thought it'd be good to, you know, kind of try to tell the whole story. Never really talked about my battle with addiction or what led me to go to rehab. You know, there had been a lot of speculation around that time. So, you know, now 5 years later, being a year removed from retirement, I thought it'd be a good time to, you know, just kind of dig into all of that stuff.
CC Sabathia is joining us. In fact, I was going to ask you about that because you could have done the doc and it could have just been highlights about your career and most people would have done it that way. But you did want to talk about the tough times. You did want to get into all that. You wanted to share that. Why was that so important to you?
It's weird because the tough times is so much a part of my story. Just from the time that I growing up, like, you know, everything, you know, dealing with so much death and you know, from a young age, I couldn't tell, you know, the happy times without telling, you know, everything that kind of went along with it. So, the sad times are part of my story, but, you know, I just want people to know that, you know, athletes and, you know, whoever else you know, celebrities have, you know, normal lives and go through different normal things just like everybody else. And, you know, addiction has no prejudice. You know, white, black, rich, poor, you know, addiction strikes everybody. And hopefully this doc can help somebody.
Under the Grapefruit Tree, the C.C. Sabathia story does debut this evening on HBO, 9 p.m. Eastern. In 2015, C.C., when you checked yourself into rehab, one of the assignments was to write a letter to yourself as if you were one of the family members. You wrote from the perspective of your son, Karsten. You said that when you were reading the letter, you realized that it sounded a lot like speaking to your father. What was that moment like?
It was just like a weight just lifted off my shoulders. Just like this darkness that, you know, I was just trying to figure out what had been wrong with me. I mean, you know, my father, by the time I went to rehab, my dad had been dead for 12 years. But I had never really, you know, grieved or dealt with, you know, any of those emotions. I just tried to pack them away and just keep going. And, you know, I started reading that letter, and it was literally me writing a letter to my father. And like, in that moment, I just felt so much better and just felt so enlightened, I guess, if that makes sense. As to why I was drinking and why I was, you know, what I was trying to, the feelings I was trying to chase away. So I just felt, you know, in that moment that I had a better understanding of why I was actually an alcoholic.
C.C. Sabathia is joining us. C.C., how old were you when you started to drink?
I was 14 the first time I had a drink. 14.
So, for instance, like, your father never saw you play baseball in high school. What kind of an impact did that have on you?
You know what? At the time, I didn't really think it had an impact on me. But, you know, looking back, you know, on it now, it was just time that we missed. You know, if I had been so close with them, you know, up until I was 12 years old, and then they split, and then I didn't see him again. So it was almost like he had turned me into this, you know, great athlete that he never really saw, you know, got a chance to see what it turned into. And then even, you know, the same thing as far as me, you know, getting to the big leagues. And, you know, his dream was to watch me pitch in Yankee Stadium. All he ever talked about was me pitching for the Yankees. And, you know, for me to be able to come here and win a World Series and him not be a part of that, you know, that hurt too, because, you know, all these dreams that, you know, we had together, I got a chance to live out without him. And that still hurts.
Right. So how did you go about coping with that? That's really difficult. How did you cope with that?
You know what? It's just in that letter and you know, dealing with the emotion of, you know, not having him around. And you know, sometimes if I'm driving down the street and I'm thinking about him and I need to cry, then I'll cry, you know. Or there's not a day that goes by that there's not something that reminds me of my dad or makes me think about my dad. You know, I still miss him a lot to this day. And, you know, not trying to hide or run from that emotion is what, you know, not makes me turn to a bottle every day.
C.C. Sabathia is joining us, being very candid about his background and story. So, C.C., when you were drinking during the regular season, were you doing it when you were pitching? I mean, are we talking about a pretty regular habit? What was it like?
Yeah, I never was on the mound, actually, you know, had a drink on the mound or, you know, during the game or anything like that. But it would be right after games. And then I would drink the next 3 days, take 2 days off pitch, and then, you know, be on that routine. And almost, you know, not even almost, to the point where, you know, I did that for 15 years. So when I came out of rehab in 2016, I didn't know if I could pitch without alcohol. Like, it had become so much a part of my routine that I was worried about it not being in my routine, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy, because I was going to say, how were you able to perform at a level like that, drinking like that? And then you posed the question. I was actually concerned whether or not I could do it without the alcohol. But I'll go back to my first question. How were you able to perform the way you did and have the career you did drinking like that?
Honestly, I just kind of perfected detoxing myself. You know, I would go to the park that next day after I pitched. I would drink all night. I would go to the next day, to the park the next day, and just do cardio like crazy. Sweat everything out, and then do it again. And I would do that for 2 days straight. And then I wouldn't drink at all. It would just be, you know, water and Gatorade, and I would pitch. I mean, you know, when you're young, in your 20s, and, you know, I was, you know, in my 20s and early 30s, you could pretty much do anything.
We're talking to C.C. Sabathia. That's amazing. Like, so in October 2015, you finally felt like you had to reach out. You had to ask for help. How did you go about doing that? And why did you know at that point that this is the time I have to do this?
You know what, Jim? That was the first time, getting back to, you know, me being drunk on the mound, or, you know, how did it affect me? That was the first time that I actually was drunk at the field where I couldn't throw a bullpen. That morning, that Sunday morning, You know, and I had just, I was just like fed up. You know, it was a bunch of stuff that was going on during the season 2015. I got, you know, a picture of me out on the balcony smoking weed in Atlanta. Then I get into a altercation outside of a bar in Toronto. So I knew after Toronto that I needed to go to rehab. I just didn't know if I would, you know, have the balls to speak up and you know, say that I needed help. That's the hardest part about addiction is actually saying that you need help. So, you know, after that, you know, we clinched in New York, go to Baltimore, and, you know, I had drank that whole weekend and got to the field that Sunday morning and couldn't throw my bullpen. So I grabbed Chris Young and Dylan Betances, two of my closest friends still to this day, and told them what I was thinking about doing. And they both encouraged me that I was doing the right thing. And I went to Joe's office, and he called Cashman. And, you know, they both the Yankee organization top to bottom, but really, you know, Cash and Joe 1,000% had my back and just made me feel like I was making the right decision, even on the eve of a playoff game. You know, they didn't care. It was just all about my well-being and, you know, how I was going to be for my family. And, you know, that made me feel like I was making the right decision when your employer, you know, the biggest franchise in sports history has your back like that. It makes you feel like you're making the right decision.
You know, CC, that's so true. That is so critical and that's so pivotal. But I can't tell you how much I respect and admire that you're telling this story the way you are. And back to your point about the hardest part often is just saying, I need help. I need help. You also told the Daily News, quote, when we grow up in the hood, people were always telling us, don't cry, don't be a punk. You can't show any emotion, things like that. Is that what you're talking about in part when you say the hardest part is asking for help?
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure, you know, dealing with mental health in general, growing up in the hood, that's not a thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no such thing as mental health. So, you know, yeah, I mean, just actually, you know, saying that I need help, that I'm an alcoholic, that, you know, I can't control this, I think is the hardest thing for everyone. You know, just facing the addiction is the hardest part. The last 5 years of my life have been great. And I remember I used to sit on the other side when I was, you know, still drinking a lot and, you know, people get sober and be like, man, my life is so much better now that I'm not drinking. I used to sit on the other side and be like, that's bull crap. Like, I don't believe that. But now, 5 years being sober, you know, it's been the best 5 years of my life, and I definitely wouldn't have been able to pitch, you know, the tail end of my career had I been drinking the way I was early in my career. So, I mean, you know, dropping the alcohol was literally the best thing that you know, I could have ever did in my life.
We are talking to CC Sabathia. I'm really curious, like, when you look back on rehab, for instance, if the toughest thing was to ask for help and actually start that process, what was the experience then like, and what moments stick out to you the most?
Man, I'm going to be completely honest. Rehab, for me, was awesome. 29 days of no phone. Everybody knows where I'm at, and I just get a chance to, like, work on myself. I wish I could do that once a year, where I get a month to myself with no phone and just kind of reset. Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that sticks out to me, though, was, you know, writing a letter and just some of the things. Like, if you really...
CC. Oh, all right. We'll see if we can finish that up. We got to reestablish that connection. You know what? Let me take a short break, maybe. Why don't we take a really short break and see if we can just finish the interview up. It's an amazing conversation with CC Sabathia. That documentary drops this evening on HBO. Wait, don't go yet. Let's see if we can just get him back and finish it. All right, so again, it's Under the Grapefruit Tree, the CC Sabathia story. It debuts this evening. Yo, Adam, are you good? CC, got you back there. So finish that thought really quickly. You were saying that if you could, it'd be great to have something like that every single year, like 29 days, 30 days, no phone, reset. You love rehab for that reason.
Yeah, I did. But just, you know, you were asking me what's the biggest thing that sticks out.
Right.
You know, just me writing that letter.
Right.
So that happened early on in the rehab process. And, you know, I just felt like, you know, I was on my way to figuring out, you know, what was actually wrong with me. So, yeah, I mean, I think rehab can be really helpful if you go in there and with the right mind frame of trying to figure out what's actually wrong with you.
So, CC, I mean, you sound absolutely amazing, and you did the hard work, and you turned your life around. Can I ask you something? I mean, normally guys have to hit rock bottom to get that kind of leverage on themselves. I mean, how close did you come to losing everything?
I mean, for me, I guess rock bottom is different for everybody, you know? for me, rock bottom was not being able to do my job. Like, that, you know, for me, I've always felt like I was here to pitch. That's what I was literally born to do, is to go out on the mound in front of how many ever thousand people and throw a baseball. And when I and when this stuff off the field is getting in the way of what I was born to do, then, you know, that's what I feel like I needed to speak up.
All right, so before I let you go, I'm curious, if that's what you were born to do and that's your identity, a lot of professional athletes will say that, and then when they have to make that transition to life and they can no longer do, quote, what they're born to do, it can be really challenging. It seems like you've made it look pretty easy. Has it been? What's that transition been like for you?
It's been easy for me just because, you know, I felt like I was done with the competition part of my life. Like, you know, people, I was talking to Ryan Rucco. We do the podcast together. We were talking the other day, and he was, you know, asking me did I miss it. And I don't, because, you know, when I was pitching in the All-Stars at 12 years old and going out, you know, and I would start all the games, obviously, because I was the pitcher. So if it was a big game to be started, I was starting that game. I got that same feeling that I had at 12 is going out in Yankee Stadium, you know, at 30 years old and pitching in those games. So, you know, for me, I have been pitching in big games, to me, for 30 years. You know what I'm saying? So I was done with the competition part of my life. Obviously, you know, the way my career ended, leaving my shoulder out there, it couldn't have ended in a better way for me. Like, that for me, is literally how I wanted to go out. I literally left everything out on that mound at Yankee Stadium. I, you know, had a stent put in my heart before my last year. You know, my shoulder gave out. My knee is out there. So, no, I mean, the way I played the game, I left everything out there.
I was going to say, you literally left everything out there. So, CeCe, finally, and I'm really excited for you to have this drop this evening, what would you say to somebody who is listening right now who's having trouble with alcohol but has not taken the steps to seek help?
I think, I think the biggest thing is just getting help. And if you can watch this story tonight and it can inspire you, or you're listening to this right here and, you know, you feel like you need help, you know, reach out, because if there is help out there, and your life can get better for sure.
It's an amazing story. Under the Grapefruit Tree, the CeCe Sabathia story is going to debut this evening, 9 p.m. Eastern on HBO. It's going to be available to stream on HBO Max. CeCe, so good to have you on the show. Can't wait to see that tonight, and so good to get caught up. CeCe, thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Jim.
You got it. CeCe Sabathia. All right, quick timeout. Great job, CeCe. Time now for a sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Sunday, the NFL on CBS has a slate of games shaping the playoff picture, including the Colts clashing with the Steelers, as well as key matchups featuring Washington and America's team, the Browns. Get set for kickoff, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, with JB and the guys on the NFL Today. Sunday, the NFL is on CBS. Nice. Which one is it, fellas? Come on, Alvin. Stop lying to me, son. What? Yeah, that ball don't lie. That ball don't lie, but that board op does. 1-800-636-8686. My thanks to CeCe Sabathia. That documentary is going to drop this evening. That's going to be really interesting to see. All right, some reaction quickly. Dear Jim, judging by the last three games, it is obvious the Steelers peaked way too early. Signed, the TV show Entourage. Marcus in Denver. A lot of you think that that series did not end well. Yeah, they had a good run. The show was awesome for a while. Romy, the Steelers had a good run, but this is going to end horribly. Regards, the final season of Game of Thrones. Danny in the 402. I sense a common thread here. Dear Jim, what a season for the Steelers. They started off strong, but they're ending badly. Yours, The Sopranos, last episode. All right, so we've heard from Entourage, we've heard from Game of Thrones, we've heard from The Sopranos. Anybody else? Rome Show. What the hell happened to the Steelers? Things were going great, but then they fell off a cliff. Yours, Owen Wilson's career arc. Nick in Westchester near LAX. Add Owen Wilson to the list. Anybody else? Hi, Jim. The Steelers need to just admit it is over and move on. Regards, the entire cast of Grey's Anatomy. Ashley in Nebraska. Add that one.
War Lady Clone.
Jim. Stop with this nonsense about peaking too early. It's worked out great for us. Signed, Macaulay Culkin and Lindsay Lohan. Marcus in Denver. Romy, Juju Smith-Schuster dancing on the Bengals logo and then getting lit up is karma at its finest. Regards, not giving any change to the homeless guy and then being forced to sit at the stoplight right next to him and trying not to make eye contact. Signed, Geoff. Hey, Alvin, let me ask you about some potential sound. So when I think of CeCe, one of the first things I think of is CeCe back in studio back in the day when Ryan Garko brought in like four of his teammates. We had like four of the Indians in studio. And it was Garko, of course. He was the ringleader. He was always such a great jungle guy. And Benny and CeCe. Who else? Bart Swain was the PR legend of the Indians back in the day. And he helped set that thing up. Do you have any of that sound? I'm trying to think of what year that was.
Chad in Portland.
Chad in Portland.
The Irv emails, love them.
Dude, Ben, I didn't know that you were as dialed into it as you are. What do you think, Ben, about Chad in Portland and him cracking on Irv every single day?
That's probably the funniest emails I hear every day.
And, you sure these two aren't some of the guys who are acting like they're
in Chad in Portland? Exactly. So you've got an Indian player saying Chad in Portland was his favorite caller. Like they knew the callers. And one of the other guys says, are you sure that they aren't the guys? And remember Tobin yesterday, who for the first time in the history of the program actually made it better. Tobin called these guys and tried to stir the pot and try to take a run at them. This is way back in the day.
Listen, I know you know better, but it's amazing. Now we've even got Major League Baseball players who are mistaking me for someone who believes in bad publicity. This is so great. I got to point out just a few things, okay? Not only have I been a Smackoff invitee, not only have I been immortalized in Alvin's mix, not only have I been favorably compared to Jason and Thornton, but I have also been one of the most legendary callers in the history of this show. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, is it starting to feel like Jason Stewart's dorm room in there?
Are you kidding me about this guy? All right, so first of all, do you believe that Tobin, that was 2007, Tobin said to four or five major leaguers who were in studio with me on this show exactly what he said to everybody yesterday, verbatim. I was immortalized in Alvin's mix. My man, how many times have you uttered that phrase in real life since then? How often do you say that? At parties? At work? At home? How often do you utter that phrase, Tobin? I was immortalized in Alvin's mix. Dude, you were like one of 5,000 sound bites in a 5-minute clip that was speeded up. And did you just accuse those guys of recreating the J-Stew dorm room? It's incredible. All right, so that Ryan Garko set that whole thing up. Gark brought in a number of his teammates. They were in studio, and that was back in 2007. CeCe was one of the guys. Like, CeCe came into studio. So when I think of CeCe, I've got a million memories of him and a million different thoughts, but that's always one of them. That was a great jungle day, a great jungle moment. Until Tobin called up and wanted credit for being, quote, immortalized in Alvin's mix. Hey, bro, do you use that to try to get reservations? Do you do that to try to get bottle service? Do you do that to try to get sex? Do you do that to try to get comped in Vegas? I mean, how really eerie and weird is that? Like, I didn't even know he was going to say that. I just said on the fly, Alvin, can you pull me sound of that? I didn't remember that Tobin called those guys that day. I just said that when I talk to CC Sabathia, one of the first things I think of is him coming in studio with Ryan Garko et al. And there was Tobin saying the same exact thing to them that he said to us yesterday. I mean, Tobin, dude, how often do you use that? Tell me you're not going to cut the COVID-19 vaccine line with that. Hey, yo, can I get that vaccine? You know who I am, right? I was the guy that was in Alvin's mix. Give me my vaccine. Bro, is that your go-to pickup line? Do you pull chicks with that? This is why Tobin called, because Garko took a run at him first.
The other day when you guys were discussing worst callers and Tobin called in, I was a mockery. Like, he calls in, you got call waiting. He's talking about Miss South Carolina and couldn't get it out. That was bad.
What's better than major leaguers being in studio? Major leaguers being in studio and killing the callers to the show. It was so great. All right, we're coming back. Second hour is wide open. I have thoughts on Kevin Green that I want to share with you. And then more telephone calls. Stay with it. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Do not go anywhere.